With the emerald ash borer, oak wilt, pine needle drop, and others, there are a large number of threats facing Iowa's trees right now. But to know how serious these threats are, it's important to understand our population of trees. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. DNR foresters Matt Brewer and Mark Vitosh will be here to share the results of a statewide tree survey. We'll find out what kinds of trees are planted where, talk about concerns about a lack of diversity, and talk about what kinds of trees we should be thinking about planting. Then horticulturist Richard Duran will join us. He, Matt, and Mark will answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. It's also National Arbor Day. So today we're going to talk about trees. And we'll take your questions later in the hour. We're also going to get an overview of our tree population in Iowa. But first, I want to take just a moment to say thank you to you. As you probably know, we wrapped up our spring membership drive this morning during Morning Edition. We wrapped up about a half an hour early, thanks to so many contributions, so many people getting involved and investing in Iowa Public Radio. We did meet our goal. This also means we will not be doing a summer membership drive, which we are all excited about. Thank you so much for doing your part to keep Iowa Public Radio strong and growing into the future. Now, let's talk about trees. With me today is DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Welcome back. And DNR Urban Forester Matt Brewer is here for the first time. Hi, Matt.
Good morning.
Great to be with you. Thank you so much for being here. We'll even turn on your microphone here in a couple of seconds. So there you are. All right. And of course, horticulturist Richard Duran will be joining us later on in the show. But Matt, for the last few years, the DNR Forestry Bureau has been doing an inventory of public street and park trees in 273 communities around Iowa. What is the goal of this survey?
It's several fold First is just to collect the data that we're able to share with communities, and the data collected has been on the individual community level, but we've also been able to make some analysis statewide. So first thing is just to have the data about what's in communities in terms of the species mix, the size of the trees, their leaf and wood condition, maybe what some of the management activities need to be, those types of things, and also to monitor and watch a handful of invasive species or either known or potential threats. So we're collecting a lot of data with the field activities, and we're hoping that communities can use that long term to be able to plan for 10, 20, 30, 40 years on down the road, and take care of their urban forest, and also prepare for things like emerald ash borer and other diseases or insects that may threaten down the road.
Now, you've been focusing on smaller communities in this survey. Why is that?
We've focused mostly on communities 5,000 population or less, and there are a huge number of those in Iowa. So it's not like we've had to look very far to find those. We feel like those are communities where they may not have a staff person devoted to trees, and so we can really get in there and provide that service and help them move their tree program to the next level.
All right. And of course, in the last couple of years, with all the talk we've been doing about the emerald ash borer, it's become very apparent that we have more ash trees than we probably should in the state of Iowa. When you look at this survey, what do you see about the species that we've planted?
Yeah, great question. And one thing I would like to mention is that we've had funding support from the U.S. Forest Service and also the state of Iowa. So that's allowed us to be able to put this together. But we've found some really interesting data on the species level as far as what's out there. And I guess I would kind of lay the groundwork by saying that the latest national standards are not to have more than 10% of your tree canopy in any one species and not to have more than 20% in any one genus. Those have been around a long time, and now people are kind of saying 10% species, 10% genus. You hear some of that. So just use that as a frame of reference. But we found that on the species level, out of about 100 that we cataloged in the tally, the top 10 made up 65% of the canopy. So we're heavy in things like ash and maple, also crabapple, hackberry, black walnut, and honey locust rounded out the top 10. Probably the more startling and important data is on the genus level, and that would be like the all the oaks, all the ash, all the maples, as opposed to, you know, green ash is a species. So on that genus level, we found that we have even a smaller variety of trees out there, and even less diversity. And so that's really concerning, because a lot of insect and disease problems run either – they'll either threaten a genus, like the ashes, emerald ash borer, or they'll threaten at the species level. And so finding that, for instance, 37% of the canopy consists of maples, in this public survey, this is only in city right-of-ways along streets between the sidewalk and the street, and in some parks and other public areas. So it's only public property.
Right, but 37%.
37%.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Of course, we see a lot of maples in yards, too.
Yeah, you know, anecdotally, looking past the sidewalk, we're seeing probably at least as many as what's in the public area. Ash are the number two genus, and they're at 17%. So that's 54% total. And if something comes in, emerald ash borer is already threatening the ash. If something comes in that threatens maples, you know, you're potentially losing every other tree as you go down the block. And so that's really what we're trying to avoid, is that mass loss of tree canopy that changes the real complexion of communities.
Now, you're also looking at the age and health of these trees. What did you learn from looking at the average age of all of these trees?
The age distribution was interesting as well, and we measure this at 4.5 feet off the ground in the measurement of diameter, and we found that most of the trees are between 6 and 30 inches in diameter, so they're kind of in the middle of their lives. They're producing great benefits at that point. They're growing vigorously. They're real assets to the community, and so that's good. The other good thing that we found was that about 18% are in that young-ish stage. So we are doing a good amount of planting, and the good thing is that we're planting slightly less numbers of maple and ash than in the existing canopy. So you know, we're doing some right things there in terms of diversifying the canopy, and you know, with the loss of ash coming in a lot of communities, we're really encouraging folks to plant more trees, number one, and plant a good diverse mix, number two.
Now, I'm surprised to not hear oak very high on the list.
Yeah, and actually oak was third.
Okay.
At 6%. So
that's a lot less, though.
It is. Yep. It's a pretty big gap there, and there's still certainly room for a lot of oak planting to take place. It's a great native species, and at 6%, even if you use that 10% threshold for the maximum, we've still got a lot of oak trees to plant.
All right. Now, I would love to hear from both of you. I mean, obviously, a lack of diversity is something that is concerning with this, especially with all of those maple trees. And we know that ash trees are a problem. We don't have a threat bearing down on maple trees right now, but that is a possibility in the future. So when you hear these numbers, Mark, what springs to your mind? What are your concerns?
I don't sleep at night. I don't.
All right.
I have bad dreams. The big concern with maple is the Asian longhorn beetle, which is in the United States, which is in Ohio and Massachusetts. It's been in New York. It was in the Chicago area, and they did do some things in the Chicago area to limit it there. But anytime you're loaded that heavy in with two species, over 50%, you're strongly concerned. The one thing about the oak, white, maybe we're not seeing as much as a street tree. There sometimes can be concerns because acorns hit cars, they're projectiles on playgrounds, things like that. So they're more maybe of a park tree and stuff like that. There are a number of communities that do still allow oak as a street tree. It makes a great street tree, and those acorns aren't there too long, and the squirrels got to eat. But yeah, there is a lot of concern that we're so heavy to one side, and you never know what new pest might come around.
Matt, what are your main concerns? Are you staying up at night too?
texting
Mark and saying, I'm scared.
Yeah, Mark and I are back and forth. I think that he summed it up very well, and that's really the big thing. We don't want to be in a position like we were in the 50s and 60s to lose whole streets of trees. There's so many benefits, and also just the character of the neighborhoods is wrapped up in trees. And so I couldn't elaborate a lot on what Mark said.
There's been a lot of lessons from Dutch elm disease and now emerald ash borer, and something keeps showing us that, hey, you got to plant more diversity. So when the elms died, we basically planted ash and maple. And so now the ash are going to die. We need to learn from that and really take it in and see how we can diversify. And the thing
people
is,
people love uniformity. We love to line a street with the same tree.
And so what some communities are doing, and they realize that too, is some communities are taking streets and maybe making that individual street more uniform, realizing that they may lose that whole street. But then they'll go down the next street and put in something else. Some are looking at that. But I think sometimes we need to look at, could it be every other one, every third one? Canopy is canopy. And I realize that because we know that if you have that funnel, that brings you down the street. It focuses you going where you're going and going to business places and stuff like that. That tree line does focus you in that direction. But would you rather see a little hodgepodge or not see anything at all because they all died from one disease or one insect? So we got to make a choice there somewhere. So, but I think we are working with landscape architects and designs. How do you design these things with diversity, but also to meet some of those other criteria? And that can be a challenge, but people are looking at that.
Well, and you mentioned crabapple trees. I think that's another one that people love to have those flowering trees, the same tree along the street, and those that beautiful flowered canopy that lasts for, 2 weeks.
Right.
But so we need to try to break out of that mold.
We're both shaking our heads.
Yes.
Yes.
That's not audible, but okay.
We got to try to balance that somehow. And I think designers and landscape architects and others are starting to try to look at that. How do we get that blend, but also add some diversity into the landscape.
All right. Well, we will talk a little bit about, of course, most of us aren't community planners, but we'll talk about choosing trees for our own yards. And of course, it's Arbor Day, so we'll talk about planting trees, and we'll also be answering your questions. So please join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, DNR Foresters Mark Vitosh and Matt Brewer, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron will join us shortly. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. It's also National Arbor Day today, so we're talking about planting trees, but we'll also answer your questions about the other plants in your life as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh, DNR Urban Forester Matt Brewer, and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron is with us as well. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And before we get to the phones and start answering questions, we've been talking about the survey of trees in cities and on parkland. But what does that mean for the homeowner? If I want to add a tree or two in my yard, what can I take away from the information that you've gathered? What should I be thinking about?
Well, I think this information is just as relevant to the homeowner as to, people that manage large populations of trees or maybe do larger planting plans, because there's a lot of homeowners out there, and if we all are planting trees, that's great, and if we're all planting a good mix, that contributes to the overall canopy that Mark was talking about earlier. And so whether folks are working in their backyard or planting a school planting or a city planting, we're really we're really, you know, issuing that kind of that call to action because of this fairly startling data, you know, to really mix up their species mix and try and spread it out a bit.
So even if they're planting two or three trees, diversity is not three different types of maple or even three types of oak. You know, plant an oak, plant a honey locust, use ginkgo, Kentucky coffee tree. We're even going back now. We've come full circle. There are some American elms available now that can be planted out there that are showing good tolerance to Dutch elm disease. So, but again, we wouldn't want to plant five of those in our yard or three or whatever. So the more mix, and as Matt mentioned earlier, what we're seeing is the more different genera you can plant, the better. Again, having different species is great, but if you're in the oak group or then in the linden group or in the elm group, the more you can mix those up, the better. Because as we know, a lot of these different insects and diseases are specific usually to a particular group. So if you have a lot of different groups, your landscape's going to be less susceptible. And that includes shrubs and everything else that you plant in your landscape. We know that diversity is better for a lot of different wildlife habitat, but it's also more defensible against some of these issues.
All right, and we have a lot of people with questions about trees, so let's get to the phones, 866-780-9100. It doesn't have to be a tree question, but we're going to start with a few of those. David is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, David.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
Yeah, so in my neighborhood here in Des Moines, we actually have quite a bit of sycamore trees, and I think they are just beautiful. So my question pertaining to that was, what's the percentage in Iowa of sycamores, and why don't we see more of them?
All right, sycamore trees.
He's digging.
All right, what you got?
Thank you, David. Again, based on this inventory of public trees in 273 communities, which I think there's about 950 in the state. So to give you an idea, it's a really good sample. It's 140,000 trees or so, but it's not every tree in the state. But based on that, we found that sycamore is at about 1%. And so
that's not a lot.
Not a lot, yep. And they're certainly out there. They're out there, you know, a lot more in their natural setting, in low-lying areas, for instance. But there's certainly room to plant more of those.
Well, one of the issues, David, with sycamore is there is a disease called anthracnose that's very common on sycamore. And almost every spring they get hammered by anthracnose. And it causes pretty severe leaf drop and also can cause twig drop. And so it kind of gets and I don't necessarily agree with this, but it gets the dirty tree label because it does drop a lot of things. So I think in people's yards and stuff, they not always favor that. But again, it's that disease can be very impactful in the spring, but those trees are very respond to it very well. Because usually in a really wet spring, people will call me and say, oh, the leaves are falling off the sycamore. And I'll tell them, this is what you got. And if it doesn't leaf out by the middle of July, call me back. Well, they never call me back. They always come back. But year after year, that can wear on them a little bit. So, and it seems for some reason in our urban areas, that disease is more impactful than it is in our wild populations. So that's one concern. There is a selection called London Plain, which is a cross between the American sycamore and the European that is much more tolerant. But with it, we tend to push it a little too far north. So it's better for southern Iowa. So there is a selection called London Plain, and there's selections of it that are more tolerant. But I agree. I think sycamore is a great tree. But I think because of the anthracnose and stuff as a street tree or a yard tree, sometimes people are a little more hesitant. But it's a great park tree. It's a great tree down in kind of low-lying areas. But it is also a very large tree. So if you have a small yard, it will
not
dominate the neighborhood, maybe not the best. But if you have a large yard or a large area, a large park, I think it's a good alternative.
All right, David, thanks a lot for your call. And Ann is up next in Iowa City. Hi, Ann. Ann, are you there?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Am.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm here.
All right, what's your question?
Well, my comment is that I've been looking for new housing for the last few years, and I have found that often, this is in Iowa City, often the developers either pre-plant trees, working with a local nursery, or they give you a short list of approved shade trees that you are required to plant so that diversity can be limited by developers, actually.
I think that's a great point, and I was actually going to bring that up myself. So, you know, so we've talked about city planners, we've talked about individual homeowners. What if your choices are being controlled by someone else? Is there an effort to educate developers about this?
There's a lot of different programming and stuff going out there. And you know, a lot of times, just like anything, is the ease or access of things. And the thing I've noticed in the last couple of years with nurseries, you know, 10 years ago, it was hard to get Kentucky coffee tree, maybe to get ginkgo. You didn't hear about the new elms and stuff like that. They are working too. And so a lot of times I think it's access to those. And I think those groups are, and I think developers are slowly starting to look at some of those things. And we have worked with them in different programming and trying to get the word out on diversity. But she is right. Sometimes there's a limit. And in some communities, they also have certain species that you can't plant. But I think communities are really starting to try to develop lists. And the one thing I noticed a lot of times, especially if it's apartment complexes and some of those, city ordinances require that they have to plant so many trees. And they are trying to diversify some of those lists, too.
Okay. So. Well, and Matt, you were talking about looking at the ages of certain trees. And I often think about that when I drive through a new subdivision and I see all the young trees that were all basically planted at the same time. Is that something we should be worried about? Because, you know, suddenly 30 years down the line, they're going to be losing a lot of trees?
I would say it is. Yep. The recommendations on planting a diverse mix of species stand for whether it's in the backyard or in an apartment complex or a townhouse, you know, association or whatever. So, yeah, I think to the extent that that everybody can mix that up, and
so species diversity and age diversity are both important, right?
That's right. And what we're really looking at is over the long term, do we have a good mix of all that stuff? Because if something succumbs, you know, some threats do target certain ages more. Some are just all species, all in a genus, for instance. But yeah, the more you can mix it up, the better, certainly.
And this points out the more importance. We got to keep planting trees. We're getting down because we're going to lose a lot of ash. But if we stop planting, then we're going to have a big gap in that age distribution too. So we need to continue to plant to get those trees out there.
You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, DNR foresters Mark Vitosh and Matt Brewer, and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. You can join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's an email from Alan and Marion. He says, I have 5 ornamental yew bushes on the north side of my house. They're mm-hmm. about 30 years old. They've mm-hmm. been maintained and trimmed into box shapes, 4 by 4 by 7 feet tall. They're still reasonably healthy, but over time they've become too big and gangly. I've heard that yews can be radically cut back without killing them. I'd like to cut them back and start over on a shape and size. How severely can I cut them back, and when can I do it?
Well, I think your two options are, one, to maybe just remove them completely. That would be an option. The other option would be to prune them back severely, where maybe you prune them back to within like 1 or 2 feet of the ground. Now, the thing is, if you do that, for a couple of years, they're not going to look very attractive as they grow back. But you can do that because they do have the ability to come back. So I would consider maybe replacing them or pruning them back severely. If I did prune them back severely, I would do so in early spring.
All right. And if you replace them, do you have to get the whole thing out? I mean,
that can be definitely difficult. It depends upon what you plant and where you plant them. If you want to plant exactly in the same spot, you'll have to pull them out or dig them out, which can be extremely difficult.
Yes, okay.
It can be.
They usually have pretty good-sized root systems. I've done it before. Yes. It's quite tasking.
All right, we've got another you question. This is James in Des Moines. Hi, James.
Good morning. I have ewes planted along a fence row on the west and south side of my property. The ewes that are on the north side are lush and green and growing, and the ones in the back have little green buds on them, or not buds, but little green sections on them, but they look really spindly. Is there anything I can do to help them out?
Probably not much. You could water them periodically if we have a dry summer. You could give them maybe a little bit of fertilizer, like a 10-10-10. So you can do those two things, but beyond that, there's not much you can do.
Okay. Probably not what you wanted to hear, James. Sorry about that. And on the subject of dryness, are we worried yet about dryness this spring?
I'm not.
Okay.
Not at this point.
All right. We haven't had a lot of rain this spring, but Mark, are you
worried? I worry all the time. I already told you that.
Right.
And we had, in Ames, we had 2 inches last weekend, so we're in good shape.
All right. Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Elmer's on the line, and Jewel. Hi, Elmer.
Hi. I have a Colorado blue spruce that I saved from some damage a couple of years ago. And I'm just wondering, what's the latest I can trim the bad parts off of that?
We hear you. If you're pruning dead material off, Elmer, you can prune that at any time. If there's dead branches, you can prune those back. And what you want to do, like you would on any tree, you want to prune those back to the branch collar so that wound can eventually seal shut. But if you have dead material, if you got lower dead branches and stuff, you can prune that out at any time.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, it's the top of the tree, so.
And
I'm just hoping it's not that bad, you know, not alive. So.
It was damaged by the windstorm, you said, or?
No, by bugs, by an infestation that I finally got rid of. It killed all my other trees, but the two that I have left.
So you have some dead portions of the top?
Yeah.
So I would just prune those back to any green or any blue that you can prune back to try to prune those dead portions back to that green, and then what you got left is what you got left.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Elmer. Yep.
866-780-9100
is the number to call. And here's an email. And this is from Dave. He says, could you give me your opinions on planting quaking aspen in central Iowa?
I'll give my opinion. they look great. They are great in Colorado. But in Iowa, they don't perform that well, at least not in central Iowa. And that's because they're really not that well adapted to our climate. And because they're not, they tend to be stressed. And then they get like cankers and other things, and they go downhill. So I'm not real fond of them.
In Iowa, they tend to do better in northeast Iowa. They are a native species in Iowa also. We actually have big tooth aspen and quaking aspen. But as you go further north, you tend to see more populations of it, and they tend to do better. So I do agree with Richard. I would say if they wanted to try it and they had a north-facing hillside or east-facing hillside that was going to be cooler, that might be a location where they could try it. It may be less stress. But I agree with Richard. They're in the middle of the state, you're going to have more stresses, definitely.
All right. Here's an email from Joe in Boone County. He says, last fall, I planted a 50-foot row of red shallots and covered them with a mini high tunnel. They emerged in the fall and did well through the winter and are now big plants. I'd like to save some of the bulbs to plant in the fall, but I don't know if they need to be striated or cold treated before they'll sprout. He also asks, what if I plant shallot seed this spring? Can the bulbs that form be replanted without cold treatment?
They don't really need the cold treatment. I would just harvest them, let them dry, and then store them in a cool, dry place.
All right. Sounds easy. And, you know, with all of the blooms that are on trees this week, and we've had some chilly weather and just some anecdotal conversations going on in the Iowa City area of, well, there was ice on the water in the morning. Are my blossoms in trouble? How do you know if something has been damaged from frost? We've got apple blooms and cherry blossoms and pear trees in bloom.
Well, the key there is the temperature. And I think in most of Iowa, especially the southwestern half, we didn't see harmful temperatures. I would say in the western half, southwestern half, we saw temperatures around 30 degrees. And that's not going to harm those flowers as far as apples and pears. Now in northeast Iowa, we saw temperatures around 27, 26, and that definitely could damage the flowers. So if there is any damage, it would be, let's say, in a line from Mason City to Davenport.
All right. And will you know immediately?
You should, in that the flowers may blacken. If not that, obviously they're not going to set fruit. They're just going to fall off and nothing forms.
All right. And of course, it's a wonderful time to get out and see wildflowers. And how about morel mushrooms? Have you been hunting, Mark?
Well, I have. And there's been a few reports out there. And actually, Sunday, I found a handful, but that handful fit in the palm of my hand. They were very tiny. There was 14 of them. And they were very good on the pizza. But they were on a south-facing hillside. The temperatures have been real cool. But as the temperatures go up next week, we have been getting some rain. So if you are a mushroom hunter, time is really close.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to answer more of your questions here in just a couple of minutes. With me today, DNR foresters Mark Vitosh and Matt Brewer. Also with me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. You can call us 866-780-9100. You can also send your questions by email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We're also celebrating National Arbor Day. We've got two foresters in the studio. So
it actually is the state Arbor Day for Iowa,
right?
Too. So
all right.
Both.
So it's National and State Arbor
Correct.
Day today.
Yes.
And we're celebrating with two
yes.
foresters, DNR foresters Mark Vitosh and Matt Brewer. Horticulturist Richard Duran is also with us. And, of course, they can all answer your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's an email. It's got some forestry terms in it. So I'll you may have to define them for us. This is from Kay. She says, my 4-inch DBH black maple, and that means?
Diameter breast height, which
okay.
is 4.5 feet off the ground.
All right. So her black maple tree in her backyard had verticillium wilt last summer, and only about a third of it is leafing out this spring. Is there any hope for it?
Well, Kay, it doesn't look good, but depending on the health of the tree, maples, if they're healthier, can start to compartmentalize verticillium wilt. So time will tell. So a lot of times, especially back, I think in 08, when we had a lot of moisture, we saw a lot of trees with verticillium wilt, and a lot of those trees have survived. So basically, whatever's dead, she can prune that out. What she has left, let it go. And if it doesn't decline anymore, it may recover. So a lot of times it can actually compartmentalize that disease from the rest of the tree. If there's not a lot of extra stresses, if we go dry and that tree's not huge, I would give it a little extra water during any dry periods. But other than that, that's all she can do is just kind of wait and see how that tree responds. So there's a chance. It just depends on what percent. If the top is what died, she can cut that back to some side branches, and then she'll have to look at what structure she has left.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Catherine is on the line in North Liberty. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I have two quick questions. My parents have a large pear tree, and it usually, it's about every other year, it just has hundreds of pears, and this is going to be the year. I was just wondering if I can just take off some of the blossoms so they don't get so many pears, and I just don't want to make sure I don't kill the tree.
Right. What you want to do on that is within like 30 days of bloom, go out there and physically remove some of the fruit hand thin, and basically when you're done, there should be a fruit every 6 to 8 inches on the branch, just one every 6 to 8 inches. And so
okay.
you might have to remove maybe 2/3, maybe even more.
But you should wait until fruit set.
Right, because not all of those are going to develop into fruit.
Oh, okay. Great. And then the second question is more of a curiosity. I had run into at a wedding into he was a tree geologist or a tree engineer, and this tree in my parents' yard was really interesting to me. I didn't know what it was. I had never seen one like it, and I had my mom take a picture, send it to me, and he was very he was very confident thinking it was an elm tree, but I mean, it's just massive. Two people can't put their arms around it. And I kept hearing about Dutch elm disease, so I was curious as to why this one may have survived.
Actually, in the Iowa City area and throughout Iowa and others, there's a number of elms that have survived, and they've actually selected American elms that are more tolerant to the disease. So there are some survivors out there. I can name you a number in Iowa City on different streets that are still out there. With that said, I've watched some of those, and over the years, some of them actually have succumbed to Dutch elm disease, but there are still some survivors scattered through the United States and scattered throughout, and also in communities like Minnesota and or in areas of Minnesota and Chicago where they've used fungicide treatments, they've been able to prevent that disease for ornamental trees and stuff. So even the ones that haven't been treated, there are some survivors still out there.
All right, Catherine, thanks for your call. George is up next. Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, a few years ago I heard that the University of Iowa created a English walnut tree for this area for the 4 and 5 zones. Is that true? And where can I get one or two?
All right. Is there an English walnut tree? I'm guessing he means Iowa State.
Right.
Yeah.
I would say they're probably not very reliably hardy. There was some research in that area. The results were not that encouraging. So,
all right, bummer.
The black walnut is still the best.
If you like them.
Yes.
All right.
And who doesn't, actually?
Okay. I like the trees. I like the trees just fine. They're not my favorite thing to eat. I'll tell you that. But all right. Philip is on the line from Reynolds. Hi, Philip.
Hello. Thank you, gentlemen, for sharing your expertise with us today. I'm actually on a new property we purchased at the end of last year. Inherited some very nice trees and also a very large riding lawnmower. And yesterday I made a mistake and I hit the roll bar of the lawnmower against an overhanging branch on one of the nicer trees, knocked off about an inch piece of bark. Didn't really gouge the tree, just knocked the bark off. What can I do in terms of tree recovery? What can I do to help that tree?
Well, Philip, that's pretty common, unfortunately, and trees are fairly resilient. Do you think that the part you knocked off was maybe in the third of the circumference or less? Or do you have a sense?
Much less. It really just nicked it. I just made a mistake in my driving and got a little too close and nicked it. So
yeah.
much less than a third.
Yeah, yeah, yep. Well, the good news is that if it's under about a third of the circumference, the tree has a pretty good chance of being able to close that wound off and recover and not have really any long-term damage. If you get over a third, if you get into the half, two-thirds, damage that goes most of the way around, then you're looking at really impacting the ability to of the conductive tissue to do its job. But I think you're probably fine, and I would not put any wound dressings on. I'd just leave it alone. If there's a piece of bark hanging off, you could gently, remove that so that it's not a big
big open wound.
Yeah,
big hanger
on there.
Right.
But no kind of wound dressing. Just let it go, and I would think it'd probably do okay.
All right, and this is why we're a big proponent of mulch around tree bases, so you don't have to get so close with your mower. Is that
absolutely yes?
Right.
It makes it much easier.
And what should happen, Philip, within a year or so, you should start to see callus tissue, which is the new tissue that's going to close that wound shut. If you see that, then that wound is going to be trying to seal.
All right. Next up, let's go to Nick in the Quad Cities. Hi, Nick. Nick, are you there?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, I am here. I've got some big oak trees in my lawn. I'm asking about compost. So I've got so much leaves and not enough greens to put in. I'm wondering about adding coffee grounds. I've heard varying things on how acidic they are, whether from very acidic to it being neutral when you wash it out when you make the coffee.
Okay. You can use the coffee grounds. I would try to get some green material in there, maybe grass clippings if you have a bagger, because they're very high in nitrogen. That would be great. So try to get some other material, some green material. Grass clippings would be great.
All right. Maybe your neighbors can loan you a little bit.
Can help, yes.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Nick. And we've got a couple questions here on email, and I'm sure you guys are getting these questions a lot. This is one of them says, what is the required treatment to keep the emerald ash borer from killing an ash tree? And this one is from Patty. When is the best time to treat ash trees with injection? So.
Well, I'm being pointed at in here. So basically there are multiple treatments and multiple options. The one thing people need to understand, if they have an ash tree, they need to make sure that ash tree is treatment worthy, that it's actually a good candidate. So it needs to be a healthy tree. It has to have good structure. If it's already a hazard, or, for example, in my yard, I have a tree that was planted in 1963. It's already starting to show some pretty good stress. It's probably going to decline on its own. It's not a good candidate for treatment. But if they have a developing tree that's got good structure and it's healthy, it could be a candidate. Iowa State has a great publication on all the different options. Depending on the size, there are some chemicals available to homeowners. Most of those, though, have to be poured in the ground. And once you get above 20 inches, those don't work. So you have to go to a professional for, in most cases, a trunk injection. And there's a variety of those out there. There are some that have to be used on an annual basis, and there's at least one that can be used every 2 years. And so far, the research is pretty good on some of these chemicals. So it is a good option if you have a tree that you want to try to protect. As with anything, it's not 100%. It's not guaranteed. Again, if you have a tree that's unhealthy, it's not going to help that tree from the emerald ash borer because it may die of something else. But I would go to that publication. It has a good list of those different treatments. And most of those recommend a spring treatment, especially for the injections. And there's a few that can go in through the summer and even early fall. But in most cases, early spring would be the best time.
And now a lot of people are concerned about the environmental impact of the chemicals used on the trees. What do we know so far?
Well, we do know some of the homeowner chemicals. One's called imidacloprid. And we do know with that one that you need to be, that gets put into the ground. If you're near any plants that are flowering, that chemical can actually be taken up and that can impact bees. So you need to be very aware. You need to read the label. You need to know your landscape if you're going to use those. Some of the others that are injected, the one good thing about ash, their flower usually is not pollinated by bees. So there's not the attraction there. So they have not seen a connection with problems there. But if there are other plants and you use certain chemicals and they're flowering, there could be some impacts there. So that's very important to look at those labels and make sure to see what the restrictions are.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Teresa is on the line in Martell. Hi, Teresa.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, we have about 30 Eastern Red Cedar in a long line for a windbreak that are about 8 years old and about 8 feet tall, right in the middle of the line. We have one tree that seems to have been very healthy but just died this winter. We obviously assume it won't grow back from root. And so then our question is there anything that might have been an obvious thing we missed as to why it died that might affect the other trees that we would need to treat for as we look at our long row of Eastern Red Cedar?
Teresa, there's not a lot of common problems on Eastern Red Cedar. A couple years ago when we had a couple wet springs through Kansas and parts of Missouri and Iowa, we saw this just pockets of cedar kind of dying in windbreaks and other places, and they never really came up with one ultimate cause to that. The thing that I would do is, obviously, if you can dig around that area to see if there's any differences in the soils or anything in that spot or something happened to the trunk that physically damaged that tree for one tree, and then you're just going to have to watch the symptoms around to see if anything else shows up. And if it does, since you're in Martell, that's still in Linn County, correct?
Or is it correct.
I'm your district forester, so you can email me or call me, and we can try to diagnose if you start to see something else. But if the tree just died over winter, then I start thinking of soils, too much water, not enough water, or something structural with the tree, because usually with diseases, those will show up in the middle of the summer and you'll start to see different dieback and stuff like that, and the tree just won't die.
Okay, sure. And there's no real reason to keep it in place, correct?
If it's dead, I would take it out. Yes, I would definitely just take it out. But you may want to, if you can do it without too much damage, maybe dig around the roots a little bit and just see if the roots are rotten or if there's any physical damage to the trunk or, you know, even voles or anything like that that may have caused some bark damage or something. Just look for anything physical that may have caused some damage to it.
All right, Teresa, thanks a lot for your call. Here's a question from Donna in Sumner. How do I apply the tree diversity concept to an existing arborvitae windbreak that's lost trees to winter kill? You know, we do see a lot of that arborvitae, same species all along a windbreak. What do you think?
We see an awful lot of that, that's right. And this is the time of year when you're noticing the browning from the winter. You know, there's some other things that you can try and mix into to a windbreak like that that would help diversify so you're a little bit better protected. One actually is eastern red cedar because it's about that same size. You could get into something larger as well, depending on your setup, like a Norway spruce. So I think I'd try and, over time, as you see some dieback, try and just mix that up a little bit.
It may look a little more hodgepodgey because of the sizes. And another option, too, would be to, if there's room, is to put in a second row to come 20 feet away and start with something else. But in within that row, maybe do every other of, you know, white pine and spruce or something like that to mix it up that way. It's tougher in a windbreak or a hedge where you're trying to create that visual. The other thing to think about, though, like one Norway spruce can probably take up the space of four or five arborvitae. So she may be able to replace one tree and fill a gap and really still create a screen with one or two trees because
right.
They're going to get much larger in the landscape.
Let's go to another call. This is Susan in Des Moines. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I want to ask about mushrooms. I have a lot of mushrooms usually growing in both my grass and I think even out of cracks in laid bricks and in flower beds. And I'm wondering, you know, you hear about the danger of a lot of mushrooms and I know nothing about them. And how shall I treat these? Do I need to get them out so nobody will come along and pick one?
Well, I don't think you have to. I mean, some are definitely poisonous, and they're not going to hurt anything unless they're eaten, and they are poisonous. If you had small children in the neighborhood, if you have dogs and cats in the neighborhood, you may want to pick them and dispose of them just for safety reasons, but they're not going to hurt anything as far as in the garden.
All right, and we're not talking about morel mushrooms, which came up earlier. You need to know.
I would come over and handle those.
Right, exactly. But you need to know your mushroom species.
Yes.
Don't eat something if you don't know what it is.
Correct.
For sure. All right. We are out of time for today. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Mark Vitosh, thank you.
Thank you.
Are you going to plant a tree tomorrow?
Actually, I am.
All
for
right.
A demonstration in the rain.
Perfect. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh and Matt Brewer, thank you.
Thank you very much.
DNR Urban Forester Matt Brewer. We'll be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday. And again, I want to say thank you. We had a very successful spring membership drive. Thank you so much if you are a part of that effort. And thank you also if you're a sustaining member of Iowa Public Radio. You really do make all that we do here possible. Thank you for your help. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.